Thank you, Shelley Hegan, President CEO of Upper Hudson Plant Parenthood, for coming onto Hudson Mohawk Magazine. As our listeners are well aware, last week the U.S. Supreme Court overturned Roe versus Wade. What does that mean?
Well, it means that as of Friday evening, there were 6 states where abortions became instantly illegal. And it means over the course of this summer, there will probably be between 13 and 20 more. And by the time we get to the end of the calendar year, in all likelihood, 26 states will have either banned abortion outright or curtailed it to the point that it is not accessible for most people. And that is devastating for all of us and for what it means for us at Upper Hudson Planned Parenthood, where we have health centers in Albany, Troy, and Hudson. We have to get to work to be ready to expand access to abortion as much as we possibly can so that we can stand ready to support people coming from wherever they might come from.
How does this decision create even greater inequity in our society?
Well, you know, we can look back to 1970, right? What New York State made abortion legal in 1970, Roe passed in 1973. And what we know is that wealthy women, wealthy white women, were able to access abortion by traveling between states, by hopping on a plane to Puerto Rico, by going to Mexico, by going to Europe. They were able to access the abortions that they wanted. But low-income people, people of color, undocumented people, indigenous people were unable to make those kind of moves. And so they were unable to access abortion if they needed it. They were unable to control the size of their families, their ability to stay in school, their ability to stay in the workforce, their ability to just pursue the lives that they had planned for themselves. And it was devastating. When Roe passed, suddenly people were able to make decisions for themselves. And it really changed everything. We can see the statistics are very clear about the level of involvement in the economy and the number of college graduates who are female has just continuously risen ever since Roe. And that's really what we're looking at now is there are going to be people who can access abortion, and for them, it may become inconvenient, but much will not have changed. And then there's going to be large groups of people throughout the middle of the country and throughout the South that will completely lose access. And one of the things that is shocking to me when I look at the map and I sort of overlay the map of the states that decided to take up Medicaid expansion, we have states that have declined Medicaid expansion. They have among the lowest educational attainment in their states. They have terrible health outcomes. They have high maternal mortality rates. They have high infant mortality rates, all of which primarily affect poor people, rural people, Black and Brown people. And those are the places where they're now also going to take away abortion as an option for people. We also know that delivery and forced deliveries are more dangerous than abortion. So if you are living in a state that has really abysmal maternal mortality rates, you're being asked to take risks with your health that you didn't want to take. It is stunning to me, and it seems completely un-American.
The coat hanger is an image that is often brought up, but it's a bit outdated. Now we have pills and different types of technologies. So what are the dangers that people who seek abortions might be choosing now? And what can you tell us about the availability of different types of pills?
So you're right. That sort of 1970s image of the coat hanger is horrific, and we all know what it means. I would not be so quick to say that people will not resort to that again. I definitely know from my colleagues in Texas who have already been facing these levels of bans that their call centers are frequently talking to people on the phone saying, okay, I'm standing in my pantry and my cleaning supplies are X, Y, and Z. What can I use? So people are still resorting to non-medically sound self-induced abortions. And that's dangerous, and we should all be really worried about that. I think as far as what we do have now, you're absolutely right. The medication abortion has been transformative in terms of people being able to manage their own abortion care. And here in New York State, I would say we started doing medication abortions at Upper Hudson right around the time they were becoming available. And we now, I would say, 2/3 of the abortions we provide are medication abortion and 1/3 are in-clinic procedural abortions. People appreciate the privacy of it. They appreciate being able to have their abortion take place at home. And in the case of New York, they're doing it under some level of medical supervision. It's very non-invasive, but still they have to access the medication through a provider. So there is someone who they have to talk to, which we find our patients really do appreciate. People will be accessing, and I know they already are, accessing medication abortion pills online and through international sources. Certainly, we would want to make sure that they're having access to the most reputable sources as possible. You know, there's of course the risk in places where abortion is not only going to become illegal but criminalized, that if people get pills that are from unreputable sources and those pills don't work and they end up in the hospital, then you're talking about people being arrested for attempted abortions. So the self-managed abortion comes with risks in those states, but I do think that it will save a lot of lives. Medication abortion will save a lot of lives.
So could you walk us through what does it mean to use an abortion pill?
Sure. So the medication abortion protocol that we use requires 2 sets of pills, and I think it's 12 hours apart. I can't remember how many hours in between. So the patient will typically come into the clinic, although there are opportunities to do it via telehealth and then come to the clinic to just pick up their meds and go home. So they may or may not have a face-to-face visit with a provider. And the provider will identify when their last menstrual period was, and provided they know when that was, they will be able to tell how many weeks it's been, and you can have a medication abortion up to 11 weeks after your last menstrual period. So if it's in that time range, they will be given 2 pills that they take buccally, which means like you put them in between your cheek and gum and they dissolve. And the patient then goes home with the other set of pills after the period of time. They go home and then they take the second set of pills in the same way. The first set of pills essentially ends the pregnancy, and the second set of pills expels the pregnancy. Mm-hmm. So when they leave our office, they're technically not pregnant anymore, but they still are retaining the products of conception. Those leave the body after the second set of pills. In terms of follow-up care, we typically like to talk to the patient to make sure that they're doing okay, that their bleeding isn't excessive, and also to make sure that they're feeling well in general. We do recommend people take a pregnancy test afterwards at a certain point to make sure that they're no longer pregnant. But it is not an enormous amount of aftercare required. Now, if someone comes to us and they don't know when their last menstrual period was, then in the health center, we're able to do a ultrasound to identify if there are products of conception and how large it is. And that is an indicator. They can at that point tell what the gestational age of the embryo is, and they can decide whether or not the person is eligible for a medication abortion, and then have a conversation with them about what method is best for them.
Would it be possible for somebody to take this pill in one of the states where it's illegal and safely do so without any legal risk?
I would say that there's always going to be risk. And I wouldn't want to tell anybody otherwise. Already, women are arrested for miscarriages. Women are arrested for endangering the life of a fetus for taking drugs when they're pregnant. So there's already a criminalizing of pregnant people that happens in this country before Roe was overturned. Now that Roe has been overturned and we're going to start penalizing and criminalizing people with these cruel laws, there's always going to be a risk. I don't want to say that like scaring people's pants off or anything, but I just think it's really important that people recognize that there are going to be risks involved. To your question, if someone presented in a hospital because maybe they were having excessive bleeding or feeling pain or something like that, that they were unsure of what was going on with their medication abortion, it would most typically present as a miscarriage. If someone didn't say, I'm in the middle of having a medication abortion, the person, the medical professional meeting them would assume that they were having a miscarriage because that's most likely how it would look. But that is one of the things that these states are going to be looking for.
So we're based in New York. We have the fortune of still having access to abortion. Do you know of any networks that are being built here? What are some things that we can do here to support people who don't have this access?
I mean, I don't know personally of what the underground networks that are going to be developing or maybe already have are. I'm certainly, you know, I listen to all the podcasts and I'm like completely swimming in what folks are doing around the country. So there are certainly networks that are going to build up. The reality is at this moment in time, it is illegal to send medication abortion from New York to another state. So we can't do that legally. That doesn't mean it's not being done. And it doesn't mean that people in other states should despair that they have no way of access, because I'm certain there are other ways. Where we are in terms of what Upper Hudson's role in this sort of new post-Roe world is we need to maintain our ability to provide in-clinic abortion services and medication abortion services here in New York. We cannot jeopardize our providers' licenses because so many people are depending upon us to be here for them. I think for some people traveling from out of state, and we just recently hired an abortion navigator so that we have people on site who can help get people here if they need to get here, get them hotel rooms, rides, childcare, all that kind of stuff. Some people will choose to come to a state like New York and have an in-clinic abortion so that they leave here unpregnant, so that they limit that risk of leaving here and having something happen back home. We are going to be making sure that people take their second set of pills in New York, because we don't want to send people away and have that risk lying over their heads or the risk of our providers, because it would be their license on the line. But we're in no way getting in the way of other people doing other things. So, you know, I heard a fabulous podcast about the network in Mexico, and they moved medication abortion around, and that for years it was just sort of operating under the law.
And they were often using ulcer pills.
Right. And I think the ulcer pills are similar to what the mifepristone is that we use. So that's been around for a long time. There are many countries that have the same drug available over the counter for that they use for different things. It's not a common treatment here. So it's not as common in the over-the-counter space. In 1970, there were things like the Jane Collective, where everyday people learned how to perform suction abortions. And we're doing those, you know, in apartments. There were clergy all over the place moving women around that needed to get moved around who didn't have the money to do it. So there's going to be roles for lots of people depending upon what role they feel the best taking on. And some of that is going to be outside of the law, and some of it is going to be inside of the law, and some of it's going to be in a gray, mushy area on the other side. And I think we all have to kind of respect that different people are going to have to do different things, as long as first and foremost, the safety of our patients is always kept in mind. I feel like we're going to see a lot of things happen in the coming years, and we don't know what that's going to look like.
I appreciate you taking the time to speak with me. Shelley Hegan, President and CEO of Upper Hudson Planned Parenthood. Appreciate your time.
Thank you so much.